folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here.
Hello, and Hava Derby.
So we'll be talking today, we'll be doing another local show. And the focus this time is on all the different land use controversies going on in the Verde Valley. And there are at least five of them, right, Hava?
Yeah, we're going to dive into about five.
Mm-hmm. We're going to dive into about five. So that's what it's going to be, folks. We're going to be talking about five different issues. These are all issues that are sort of on the front burner somewhere among someone. And these are issues that lie outside of the jurisdiction of Sedona, for example, and so that when the cities are contacted, they get to give an opinion. But these all these issues, including AutoCap, are outside the Sedona city limits. So it's not something that you can go and yell about to the Sedona City Council about too much.
Yeah, they do chime in and offer opinions, but it comes down to the Board of Planning and Zoning and Board of Supervisors.
Right, and I think that's something we need to talk about as we get going. Who's our first? We have. Go ahead, introduce.
Yeah, Molly Hogan of Nature of Wild Works. Hi, Molly.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm going to give a brief recap. I was at the last meeting. This was your final decision from the Board of Supervisors for your land use permit to move your wildlife center from Topanga over to Cornville on the nearly 8 acres that you purchased last year. You have received the most intense opposition I've ever seen on a project besides El Rojo. Quite a neighborhood galvanized around you not being there, and one. And I'm not going to dive in too deep on those issues, except to say that I almost got my mic turned off at that meeting because really the opposition has been operating on disinformation, and it's made it quite challenging for you. And you've got a denial for this land use permit. And of course, now the issue is just getting your animals here and safely. They've been kind of moved around. We're looking forward to you arriving here. So give us an update on what's happening with development services and what's next for the animals.
Before you do that, Molly, tell us what is Wild Works? What is it you have?
Well, WildWorks is a nonprofit wildlife care center, and we primarily have, for the last 25 years, provided outreach programs, off-site programs, to the communities in the Santa Monica Mountains and beyond, you know, in Southern California. And we provide lifetime care for non-releasable animals. So we have birds, mammals, and reptiles, and we have about, I think, 40 animals total, but that includes my domestic animals that are already at the ranch.
Yeah, horses, dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, horses and dogs. And so we're basically now asking for a specific amount of mammals, wild mammals, to be housed on 1 acre of the property. And all these animals I've known for a really long time. I raised most of them. They're very safe. They are in enclosures, and we're going to build really nice, large ones on that 1 acre. We'll have plenty of space because we have so few mammals. But the good thing is, even though they denied our ability to have the public come, so there'll be no public access with this new proposal, they have decided that by right, since falconers have birds of prey in the area without a use permit, that I can have them without a use permit. So my birds of prey, which is 10 of the animals, we'll be moving to the property as soon as we get the enclosures done.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the new use permit that we just resubmitted, just specifies the care of these animals. We provide outreach programs only, and so that totally eliminates the traffic and noise of any kind. Because mm-hmm. traffic and noise is obviously it's from people. The animals are very quiet species.
Yes. Yeah. I've spent some time with you at in Topanga, and very quiet. Very quiet.
Why is there such, Holly was talking before the show about the in more detail about the opposition to this, because it seems it's not a residential neighborhood. It's a rural area, right? It's an agricultural area. It's horse farms, and people are running cattle and all kinds of different things. So it's hard to see, given that context, that there would be this ferocious opposition. How are you holding up?
Well, it was surprising to me at first. At first, it was really hard to take. Some of the things are directly said to me, and no one's even ever met me or wanted to talk to me. So, you know, they just, are out to get me, kind of. And it's really disappointing. I mean, I've had a very supportive community in Topanga, you know, for all these years, but I didn't own the property. And so I'm not used to this kind of treatment. I mean, it's obviously I've met a lot of really nice people too, but my goal is to just talk personally to all these people and explain it to them further. They've just been spreading rumors or lies.
Yeah, they're lies. Nobody's done their due diligence around the facts of what you're doing. And I've seen the inability or the desire to not have any interest in the facts of this. And I asked everybody at that last meeting that was outside, have you ever spoken with Molly? Not one person in opposition have ever spoken with you. And I want to applaud Robin. She showed up in support of you at that meeting. One of your very close neighbors who did her due diligence, spoke with you and got the facts. So
before we go, Molly, the misinformation was that a mischaracterization of what you're trying to do, you know, that it was a zoo, that there was going to be people coming and going in their area. And according to you, they didn't really even try to figure out what you were actually doing. They just got their backs up right away based on rumor.
Well, they just, one particular person started this whole thing and just went on a rampage. And so by the time it got to, say, the housing tracts on Tissaw, they went door to door on the housing tracts with this thing. It was going to be like out of Africa, a big giant thing, open, you know, 9 to 5 for people to come and go, you know, all kinds of things. And so, you know, people voted against it. Because when I went back and went door to door there, the people went, oh, that's not what we heard. We didn't think that it wasn't what you're talking about that was presented to us.
Yeah.
I think it's important that not just your issue with your little wildlife center, but the whole idea of just misinformation controlling the whole dialogue. And I think this is an example of it, Hava, of just misinformation running rampant, and somehow we've got to get back where people actually look at the facts and find out what you are trying to do. Because otherwise, if it is a giant zoo thing, then I can understand, you know, wildlife out of Africa next door, and there it's a rural area. I can understand there would be some opposition to that.
And it wasn't just the community that was in opposition. When you watched the two last meetings, Planning and Zoning and Board of Supervisors, you had the commissioners and supervisors talking like they didn't know what the project was all about, didn't know the details. Randy Garrison called it a zoo in his last comment before the decision. So this is a case of, you know, government listening to the community, but not knowing what the facts are. So that was a really frustrating part of this process.
Well, Molly, keep us appraised of what's happening. Keep us with an update on what's happening. We're going to have to move along because we're doing five different issues, and we wanted to talk about yours first because it is less known, and the opposition is sort of over the top. So thank you very much for being with us, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Molly.
Thanks, Hava.
All right. Well, we've okay. Well, do you want to?
Yeah, go ahead to Spring
Creek. Okay, well, we're going to jump a couple of issues ahead because we've got a wonderful community person on the phone, Thomas Bonk, to discuss Spring Creek Ranch annexation with us. He has been doing so much research and work to put a kibosh on this. Thomas, are you with us?
I am.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. So we know that Spring Creek Ranch withdrew their application and have tried a new way of getting this through, and that is going to the city of Cottonwood to ask for annexation. Give us a quick overview of what that means to get annexed through the city, and the little loophole you found that might make this impossible.
Well, there's actually several legal loopholes. One is the way they are annexing the property through this artificial land bridge to, you know, envelop Spring Creek Ranch. Basically, it's referred to as shoestring annexation, and that is when you use a narrow land bridge to connect to an area that is not physically connected to the city. According to Arizona statutes, the property must be congruent with the city in order to be annexed.
So
for
does that
Spring Creek Ranch being way outside of the city limits, with state land trust in between the proposed annexed area and the city, the only way to for the city to try to accomplish this is to go way north of the state land trust across federal land to, you know, capture this property. Shoestring annexation is just a really, really bad idea, and it's been shown in studies to present financial difficulties for a city to be able to provide the services required. In this case, it would be just police and fire.
So, Thomas, tell us what this actually looks like if you look at a map, because Keep Sedona Beautiful is one place I know where there's a map of this. And what I see is this giant hook of federal land being annexed in a little bitty tiny Spring Creek. It goes around all the state land, state trust land. And I think Cottonwood's desire is eventually to buy and build on state trust lands between there and Spring Creek. But right now, if you hear about this, folks, it seems sort of amazing. Like, why is Cottonwood trying to annex this area that's so far from Cottonwood? So tell us a little bit more about this. So there are legal obstacles to them doing this. Is there a possibility of lawsuits, Thomas?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. This has been heard before the Arizona courts before. The guide for annexation prepared by the League of Arizona Cities warns against this. They actually say in a case where two tracts, which had been annexed under one ordinance, went to court. And the legality of annexing two tracts with one ordinance was not a question. However, the court did confirm that the tracts must both be congruent to the annexing municipality. In other words, the fact that one tract was congruent to the annexed municipality did not constitute congruity for both tracts.
Most of the land being annexed by Cottonwood is federal land that couldn't be built on without a whole series of hearings, and the likelihood of building on the federal land that's in this hook is really small. So what they're doing is they're annexing a huge area that can't probably ever be developed to get to one little tiny area that can be. And we did a show on this 6 months ago, and we thought afterwards we got the news that the Spring Creek proposal was not going to happen, and they revised the proposal, and then they went to see if Cottonwood, is that right, for this annex deal?
Correct. Now, the state uses the word tract in such a way as to define areas by, you know, congruent areas by owner, land use, or subdivision. The Spring Creek Ranch Phase 1 is a legally defined subdivision in Yavapai County Records. So it's a separate tract than the federal land. And by itself, it does not meet the requirements to be annexed. How the city thinks they're going to avoid any legal issues regarding this, I have no clue. I mean, it's just unbelievable that the city wants to grab this piece of property. The justification benefits and issues regarding this, as stated on the city's website, says that annexation and rezoning would allow for development of additional housing and visitor accommodation between Sedona and Cottonwood. Well, I would disagree with that. Annexation is not required for development, and rezoning, we were told that rezoning wasn't even allowed to be discussed at the first hearing on the property, on the annexation.
So, Thomas, what's your thought about why they really want to do this, if their explanation is kind of gobbledygook?
Why do they want to do this? My personal opinion is they feel that they need to grab land before Sedona gets it. Which is ridiculous, because what Sedona would have to do to get this piece of property is almost impossible. I mean, they would have to incorporate so many areas that have already said, we don't want to be incorporated. And that would be Red Rock, you know, the western part of Red Rock Loop Road. And they don't want to have anything to do with it.
It's also true that Sedona doesn't want to annex anything.
It's going to set off a whole series of land grabs by cities.
Yeah,
it's just going to be a nightmare if they pass this ordinance.
Sedona tends to never want to annex anything, and the reason is there's no city property tax. And so when they annex an area, they get lots of expenses. They become in charge of roads and sewers and all this sort of stuff, but they don't get any revenue from it.
Exactly.
So Sedona has always been very leery of annexing anything. So the probability of that Sedona would get in the way of Cottonwood on this issue, I think, is close to nil. Tell us a little bit. When we did the original show, I think they wanted 3,000 of this and 2,000 of that. They modified the plan. They dropped the size of the development. It's still huge, right,
yeah,
Thomas?
Oh, yeah, they still want something high density.
Very high.
According to the studies I've read, that an outlying area like that actually ends up costing the city more than the revenue that it can bring in. If they were annexing something actually that's congruent to the city, It would only be, I think it was 86% of the revenue would be spent on services.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, police is the research I was doing. As opposed to an outlying area like this, which would be 112% of revenue.
But Cottonwood still wants to do it,
right? Nothing about this makes sense forefront of what the issues that they're talking about. Something behind the scenes may be going on. I don't know.
Well, there's going to be an opportunity to discuss this more at the City Cottonwood City Council tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. at the Cottonwood Recreation Center. I'm sure there's all kinds of COVID precautions about getting in the room. People can speak. Of course, they is the deadline passed for getting in letters or calls to Cottonwood on this?
No, the deadline is 12 noon tomorrow.
Okay, so people have an opportunity to do a little research and let the city council know how they feel. But this is going to be considered tomorrow at 6 p.m. in Cottonwood. Thank you, Thomas, for really all of the research you did to find this shoestring annexation, and we really appreciate you, and I'm sure you'll keep us up to date, and we'll know what happens tomorrow.
Will do, and I will be online tomorrow with the meeting. I won't go over there, but
great.
I'll be there virtually.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Thomas. We appreciate you. And,
Rudy, disconnect.
Yeah, plug it right along.
We've got another program. So we've talked about WildWorks, and we've talked about Spring Creek Development Ranch. And it's not a ranch, of course, despite the name. It's a huge, very dense development. People in Sedona were totally opposed to this thing. People in the area are opposed to it. I know for a fact there are archaeological sites that are in the area mm-hmm. that are very sensitive. There's a style of rock art we don't see anywhere else in the Verde Valley.
Yeah, I walked that property. There's all kinds of remnants.
So that's another issue to consider besides yeah. the legal thing, folks. Mm-hmm. So we're going to move on to Verde Disconnect.
Verde Connect, Disconnect, yes. And we've got one of the most educated men on this matter who's with Todd Scantleberry, has VerdeDisconnect.com, where you can go kind of dive into what's wrong with this monstrosity. That we just, our three newly elected Board of Supervisors got together and put in a letter to the rest of the board, really got this thing stopped with basically asking that this not be considered until we don't look at this until next year. Todd can tell us a little bit. Hi, Todd. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, unfortunately, you did not get Todd. You have Zach Wolf on the line. So
oh,
you have,
gosh.
You have
wow. He just texted me, so I had Todd. Zach Wolf, thank you. Thank you. You have been putting lots of work into this. Give us a little update on what's happening with the progress on this project.
Well, it's been an interesting deal. As you know, it's been a road with a lot of twists and turns, but we are finally coming to the end of the road, I believe. And for the first time in a long time, really feeling like the future is bright for Yavapai County.
Nice.
The voters have spoken. We've been heard, and we have really made a drastic change to what kind of leadership we're going to have moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And this road is, we've said from the beginning that it does not meet the scope of the grant. It does not benefit current or future traffic issues. And it's just really, it was not a great project to pursue. And in the end, pretty much everything that we said from the beginning has played out exactly as we said it would.
And that grant has been given back, correct? $25 million.
It has not been given back yet. It's an interesting situation. And on what was it, November 16th, I believe, the current board had voted to basically return the grant and terminate the project. At that point, that went down as a 3 opposed, 1 in favor, and 1 absentee, because one current supervisor decided to leave the meeting rather than cast his vote.
Hmm.
And then due to a technical glitch, that vote didn't carry because their audio and video feed went down, had to be redone. And then on December 6th, lost the nerve and decided that rather than take responsibility for their actions at that point, they'd pass the buck to the incoming board and make it their responsibility. So So we have a great incoming board. We have two incumbent supervisors that and Craig Brown and Mary Mallory that are both opposing this project, and we have three incoming board members that I've just got a ton of respect and great faith in that they're going to provide the kind of leadership the Yavapai County deserves, that all oppose it as well. So the expectation is that on January 6th, when it's back on the agenda, it will be terminated at that point, and that is the correct decision. It's what's right for Yavapai County as a whole, and it gives us the opportunity to focus on real traffic solutions.
Exactly.
So Verde Connect has been in the works for, I don't know, 20 years. I don't have written figures for that, but people tell me it's been in the works a long time. And to just explain what it would be, go ahead and explain what it would be. It would be a road that would go from 260 over to the Cornville area and provide additional ways to get to Sedona. And it would go by a lot of rural developments, right?
Well, you say it's been in the works, and really there's just been so much misinformation about this, and that continues to be true to this day. So in the works, it's been a concept since the late 1990s. I think 1999 is really when it kind of turned up on the maps there as nothing more than the absolute lowest priority project in ADOT's traffic studies. So what the road was supposed to be was, and the road that they've been trying to sell us is a connector from the Corey Roundabout on Highway 260 to the Beaverhead Flats Road on Cornville Road. But the fact of the matter is that, the grant was awarded for a 2 mile section of road on almost entirely on the Yavapai Apache Nation land in Camp Verde. And the Yavapai Apache Nation didn't want a connector there. They didn't want a major road going through their sovereign nation. And so the project changed, and then it became a road that was going to go from Middle Verde Road, which is a dead-end road in a small agricultural neighborhood in Camp Verde, to Corey Road, and the Verde Connect was going to be the road that went from, and that was going to create the bridge and create the road that goes from the Highway 260 Corey Roundabout to Beaverhead Flat. The truth of the matter is, and what people really aren't discussing at this point, is that Verde Connect is not going to be built. And even if the project passed right now, it still wasn't going to be built. It was a phase two project. The only road that they were going to do at this point was going to be a bridge and a middle Verde connector. And that alone is far exceeded the budget of what the county ever could have afforded for this.
And environmentally, it really rips through a really precious riparian area on top of it.
It really does, yeah. It goes through. So you look at the Verde Valley and the way we've developed in this area, and almost every section of river frontage we have in the Verde Valley has got development right up to it. And some of that's not a bad thing. When you have agricultural land, it creates a buffer zone and keeps a healthy riparian area. Yeah, when you have other developments where you got houses built right up to it and, you know, manicured lawns down to the river, you lose that. But we have where the proposed bridge site was, is really our last stretch of untouched riparian area in this entire valley, and then a road ripping right through the heart of the Coconino National Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's and if you look at the maps and you look at the traffic modeling data and everything the project team did, the road is almost entirely out of direction travel for anyone right now, and really is to the benefit of no one. Mm-hmm. And all it was going to do, even if you were able to complete the Verde Connect, all it does is get people to the traffic jam in the village of Oak Creek about 7 minutes faster.
Right.
So, Zach, thanks for being with us. Is there anything, if folks are interested in following this issue, right now there's no hearing before the Board of Supervisors, right?
There will not be in 2020. And on January 6th of 2021, when the new board takes office, it will be back on the agenda at that point, and the expectation is that the project is terminated entirely at that point.
Thank you very much for being with us. We're doing five different issues in the Verde Valley land use, and I think this is an important one. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you
for having me on, and keep up the good work. You know, we really depend on our local media to give us good information and depend on everybody to do their own research and be educated for themselves.
Absolutely.
So.
Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Bye.
So, Hava, what's our next issue that we're taking up? It's one dear to my heart, I know, but you have
yes.
an update.
Well, yes, some good news. AutoCamp. I went to the hearing, planning and zoning hearing, a couple weeks ago. It lasted all of about 3 minutes because the brilliant lawyer, Ashley DeBoard from Flagstaff Law Group, spent a lot of time researching Yavapai County Code and found a spot where this would be in violation of let me get my glasses on here so I actually can read it here, that let's just say that they filed an interpretation request because we don't believe the code that allows AutoCamp an exemption from the rules that apply to all of us on short-term rentals, on trailers, recreational vehicles. And so it's unlawful to use these trailers as short-term rentals or overnight hotel lodging, and AutoCamp wants a waiver from this prohibition. So the lawyer has found this code that they are now sending this. There'll be pause. This case is going to be paused because the Planning and Zoning Commissioners okayed a continuance on this. And they're going to begin a separate process of asking the Board of Adjustment to interpret the county code. So this pushes it back into 2021, which, of course, is good news because it's going to go before a new Board of Supervisors. So, there'll be a public hearing to review the appeal and interpretation next year. And so this is on pause.
So AutoCamp, folks, is right up against Bear Mountain,
right up against
a wilderness area. It's at the base of the mountain. There's a beautiful canyon that runs through the property. It's hardly think of a worse place to put something like AutoCamp. Mm-hmm. So AutoCamp would be a huge development. Hava, what, 100?
100 Airstream trailers.
Yeah.
They have a direct deal with AutoCamp to supply
about
these.
About 20 acres, something like that.
18
something. So it's an issue that the Sedona City Council was very negative about.
Oh, yeah.
Their research on it was very negative. It would provide no revenue to anybody and would be a fire danger.
Oh, absolutely. It's right below that chimney that you look at when you see, and that's just a disaster waiting to happen with because there's no indoor cooking in these. So there's all outdoor cooking on barbecues.
Yeah.
out in
little campfires.
Yeah,
they're in rings and stuff.
Right, and they have a different kind of fire burning or a material that doesn't spark, but it's still, you know, it's a lot of fire in an area that fires are prohibited.
Right,
you can't build campfires there.
And that would just be additional strain on our fire department. In the fire district, and also in the police department, because you can't have that many people out there all the time. It'd be 100,000 visitors over a couple of years or something. I'd have to look at the statistics again, but it was a fairly large number of people. So that hold me to only that remark. But something's going to happen. There are going to be fights. People are going to be out there. There's going to be arguments. Police are going to get called. Domestic disputes. And so although it's in the county sheriff is a long, long way away.
Mm-hmm.
So Sedona would probably end up having to do that. And that was another thing that they didn't like.
Well, in my humble opinion, I don't think this is going to go anywhere. I mean, we looked at Randy saying yes to this, which is odd when you look at the county only standing to gate about $100,000 to $150,000 in revenue in a $250 million budget. It doesn't stand to serve the county at all to take on this huge project.
And it's an extremely sensitive area. So hopefully AutoCamp is no more. It's not a horrible concept for certain areas. It would be fine, I don't know, in
It's a great idea. There's ones over in California, Yosemite, Russian River. They're not close to these precious areas. You know, it makes sense. But this particular spot makes absolutely no sense for this project.
So that's Auto Camp. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
That was sort of odd that they moved it to the Board of Adjustment.
That was an interesting move. I was kind of flabbergasted at the beginning of the meeting because it lasted 3 minutes, and they went in and asked for the continuance, and boom, it was done. So on that note, I really want to shout out to Ashley DeBoard and Flagstaff Law Group. And Rhoda and Charlie Pitcher have put a lot of money into hiring this lawyer. So if people want to show their appreciation for this fantastic move, go to SaveBearMountain.com. And help out with their fundraiser. It's good news, and it'll move. They have to do a whole other application after they hear for the Board of Adjustments, and then we'll go through the whole process again.
Wow. All this governmental stuff is so complicated, particularly when people don't like it. I mean, the Verde Connect thing has been going back and forth for so long.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Auto Camp, and we've got a list here, folks, that we're looking at of all these different issues. But the overall, and I would like to do a program maybe next year on a more general view of development in the Verde Valley. What developments do we want? What developments do we not want? What developments injure things? What developments are just part of commercial development?
Mm-hmm.
And that'll give a chance. I'd like to have people who pro-development and people who are anti-development. We'd have a discussion.
Yeah.
By then, hopefully, we could have them in the studio, Hava, rather than just on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
Well, we've got one more issue. What is it?
Yeah, the Patel Hotel in the village of Oak Creek. And I have to admit, I hadn't really gotten too much information until last minute. So it's quite a crazy story that's developed over there. Just a quick recap, this got a yes from Board of Supervisors for a rezoning, which means they could go ahead with their hotel. Now, what happens next is it goes to the Village of Oak Creek Association. They have a recommending body, ARC, or the Architectural Codes and – or no, no, Agricultural –
It's Architectural Code, whether it fits the Architectural Code of the Village of Oak Creek's.
So it's the recommending body to the association. And so the ARC has denied this a total of 3 times. And VOCA keeps trying to get this through. In fact, they've had some closed-door meetings where decisions were made without the entire homeowners association knowing what's going on.
Yeah, now understand that homeowners associations don't really have the legal rights of a government or a city. And a lot of the obeying of homeowners associations is the fear that you'll be sued if you don't obey it, because there is no, they have no other recourse. And so this is a piece of property, folks, that's right on 179.
And Jack's Canyon.
It's in the commercial. Here's the complicated part of it. It's in the commercial corridor of Oak Creek. That's been a commercial corridor along 179 for decades. And so this would be a development down at the corner of, I think, Verde Valley
Jack's
School
Canyon
Road.
Jack's Canyon and 179.
So the other developments and hotels, people may not want them because they don't want any more hotels. This one is within the homeowners association boundaries. The others were not, if I understand this correctly. And therefore, has to follow those rules. And one of them is, of course, architectural conformity to the area.
With a little more detail, this is in the Pine Valley subdivision, too. So the Patels signed these CC&Rs back when they bought the property, which are architectural agreements. This is what is allowed, and they're really pushing it in their fight to...
So the issue is that this was once residential, zoned residential, even though, folks, frankly, nobody would build a house on this particular piece of property. It would be paying millions of bucks for a piece of land that's right on the highway.
Right.
Right. So it was never really made sense that it was residential. But technically, it was residential, zoned residential. I think the Board of Supervisors changed it to
commercial. Mm-hmm.
And then there's this, and I think Hava's given you a hint of it, of the architectural board disapproving of it, and then the homeowners association wanting to approve it, and they pointed bouncing back and forth between the two
groups.
What's the argument against the hotel, Hava? What's the main argument?
Right now, they want to make it a two-story building, which is in violation of the CCNRs. So really it becomes four stories because it has a basement and a terrace, a rooftop terrace. So we're looking at a really egregious height. They're wanting to kind of push the limits of what's allowed, even now that it's rezoned. And some, you know, they're in the CCNRs, there's talk about what happens if you want to make something commercial. But the scope of this is way outside of the CCNRs. And so really the height variance is kind of the heart of the issue right now.
So if they were building it at a low,
and this is how this works, folks. And real quick, this is a Hilton Garden Inn. This is a particular brand of Hilton.
It's a Hilton. But the way capitalism works, you maximize the use of the property. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the Patels logically want to use as much of that space for their hotel as they can. And the question is whether it's in conformity with the rest of the developments along that corridor and in Village of Oak Creek. There are lots of hotels going into Village of Oak Creek because, frankly, there's not room to put them in Sedona proper. And when I used to do a lot of tours, I would pick up people at the Hilton down there and a lot of other resorts, and they would say, well, we signed up for this, but it's not really in Sedona. And I would say, well, Village of Oak Creek is really part of Sedona. It's not in the city, blah, blah, blah. But people were disturbed. So they can't build a lot of places in Sedona. It's very restrictive. And so they want to build them along the corridor of 179 down in the Village of Oak Creek. And this has set off, I think there was a battle before this for another hotel that they weren't able to stop.
The elements, that horrible eyesore in the village. And see, the thing is with the Patels, this decision to rezone it was made before we even know what the elements is going, what effect the elements is going to have on traffic, whether it's even going to be a necessary hotel. A lot of things are being made without considering what's going to change the character of the Village of Oak Creek in terms of traffic. Yeah, there's a lot to consider in the village.
So it's another issue, folks, that we're tracking. We'll talk more about it. I do have one announcement here. Got to put on my reading glasses. Democrats of the Red Rocks are having a door breakfast. It's all Zoom. You have to go to the website and get the Zoom information. And it's using AZ legislative requests to speak. All right. Understanding and participating in redistricting. All right. So you can apply to be able to speak basically to the state Senate and House. In other words, but you have to sign up for this. So it's a little bit not complicated, but you have to think ahead if you want to talk about something. So this is a program I think you'd find really interesting, folks. It's how you do this, how you set up to be able to speak to the legislature on an issue. And the issue that Dora is focusing on is redistricting. Remember, this is 2020, and redistricting is in the works, and it will change everything. Mm-hmm. So redistricting is important. It's important that you listen in on this door meeting, participate in this door meeting, and figure out, you know, how we can participate in getting better redistricting than we have had. That's really the issue. Thank you for being with us. Next week we have a discussion of civility with Michael Austin. He's a brilliant philosopher, literary critic, comes from the Mormon tradition about civility. I hope you'll join us for that show and, of course, all the rest of our shows at vvid.org. listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.